What is up, folks? My name is Nick Tibuzek, and you are listening to the Strength and Skills Podcast today. With me is my co-host, Rado the Boss Bossage. And today, we're going to talk about... Yes!
Wow, what a flex.
That flex. All right.
I'm sorry for the Spotify people not being able to see this.
Yeah, it was massive.
Massive.
Yeah, like that guy on YouTube, this is how you get 100 girls on the beach.
Yes.
All right. Let's go into this. We got to talk about hypertrophy because a lot of people really, really like to build some more muscle. And I absolutely get that point because the more muscle you make, the more you are stronger because you have just more possibilities to get stronger at that point because you have a more muscle mass. That's an easy one. And there comes the other point nobody likes to talk about, but we are all aware of it. We all love to look good. I do, you do, Rado does. Mm-hmm. We are all in this together. We love to look good, the girls and the men. So today we got to talk about how to build muscle in the end. And actually, I think the most important question here, what's the problem with building muscle in calisthenics? And I think we got to start over and explaining how actually hypertrophy does happen in your body. And this starts actually when we look at the key drivers. What are actually the key drivers for hypertrophy? Hypertrophy is in the end the effect that happens when you when a muscle grows.
Yeah, it's just a sexy term for muscle building.
Oh yeah, we look at me. I'm wearing my glasses. I'm the professor today.
Professor is back.
I'm the professor, and we're diving into science.
Preach.
All right. Key drivers for hypertrophy in the end are pretty much how much you do, so the volume, the intensity, how hard it is what you do, because probably you probably know that when you are running, this is not really building your legs. So that's not something that has a high intensity usually, but you have a lot of volume. So it needs to be in the right context with the volume and the intensity. And of course, what is very critical to see, but you gotta have a calorie surplus, which means you gotta eat a little bit more than you burn. So these three factors, volume, intensity, and calorie surplus, are pretty much the key drivers for hypertrophy in the end. Of course, there comes in some more details and all that stuff, but these are the most important ones. If you keep them at least some kind of track, then you're pretty much very good to go with building some muscle, wherever you want to build the muscle. This is not important because this is the key formula, the one and only, the magic pill. For every muscle in the body, even your calves.
Yeah, it's important to note that the body probably won't notice the difference between, you know, having the load from coming from something external and also moving your body weight. So the two things you mentioned, the volume and intensity, like you can draw the same principles from the weight training and apply them to calisthenics. But like where things become interesting is when you go into caloric surplus to gain muscle, like obviously that immediately means you have an increase in body weight. And the increase in body weight is going to ultimately directly affect your body weight performance. So it's something that should be accounted for and you should take it carefully because you absolutely don't want to like bulk up and gain a massive amount of weight in a short amount of time. Because that's going to drastically affect how much you can actually perform when it comes to calisthenics. And then your volume and your intensity might suffer because of that.
And what is also to say here, when it comes to that, especially when you look at the term of this calorie surplus, people misunderstand that to have, like, I don't know, 500 calories more than you usually have. And it's not that you need that much. You usually can say, okay, let's have like 100 or 200 calories more, which is not a lot. That's a cookie.
It's not a lot. It's not a lot on a daily basis, but when you look at the whole week, like if you were in a caloric surplus of 200 calories per week, it's like 1,040 in the whole week.
Yeah.
1,400, I'm sorry. Which is, yeah, relatively, it's more than the 200 per day.
Absolutely. And when you look at how much you need to gain one kg of fat, that's pretty much, I think when I have that right in my mind, it's 7,000 calories for 1 kg of fat. And when you look at that, that's something you reached pretty much after 5 to 6 weeks, somewhere there. So you want in 1.5 months, you would have gained 1 kg. And this is actually something that is a rate of gain at that point, which is okay. If you have like a kg in the week, we are in trouble because you are turning fat, not very muscular and all that stuff. So that is very important to say here for the calorie surplus. On the other hand, what is also very important from my opinion right here is and this comes with this calorie surplus thing, because when you are gaining so much, then you probably will feel very, very fat after like 3 months. And then you think, oh, I got fat. I got to diet back down. And then you come into this JoJo effect that you just gain, lose, gain, lose, gain, lose. But what we actually need for hypertrophy is phases like at least 6 months to 12 months where you actually are in a caloric surplus and in rep ranges to in the context of hypertrophy. This is crucial to understand in the beginning. So if you plan to build muscle, plan for half a year or 1 year. And afterwards, we can say, okay, we diet down now, put down the, I don't know, let it be 10 kg, put it down during the next few, I don't know, 8-10 weeks, because that's possible to lose in that time frame. So let's say you're going to lose 10 kg in the next 3 months, which is like 12 weeks or something like that. And that's the phase that you think should think of. I see a lot of people who say, yeah, I do have a hypertrophy phase now, which is like, I'm going to do a hypertrophy phase for 2 blocks now, which is 8 weeks. Guess what? You didn't build a lot of muscle during that time. Probably not, especially not when you're experienced. In the beginning, yes. In the beginning, everything works and everything happens all the time. But what is very, very important to understand here, the more experienced you are, the less muscle you probably will build. So you can usually say, I think they had this one study where they checked how much muscle you can actually gain during a year. And for the experienced lifters, lean body mass, only muscle mass, the lean lifter, the experienced one, is up to 400 grams. That's not a lot. When you are a beginner, they said it's up to 4 kg of muscle mass during 1 year. That's massive. There are different terms on that if you are on roids, of course, but actually most of the people don't gain that much muscle mass during their training years, especially when you are already into this. So for me, as I would say I'm an experienced lifter now. I'm not a pro or something. I'm an experienced lifter now after like pretty much 8 years of lifting now. I have that gain rate of maybe 400 grams per year because I'm most of the time in a caloric surplus. I train hard enough and all that stuff. Yes, but I wanted to tell you that because for me, it's always so important that people stay realistic with the stuff that they are doing. It's not that you're going to put up 10 kg of muscle mass on your frame in about a year or something. That's not going to happen. I'm sorry for de-illusioning.
Yeah, it's the harsh truth, but I think it's important that it's out there. Like to kind of piggyback on what you said, I think it's also important to embrace the fluffiness that comes together with caloric surplus. You know, with in calisthenics especially, you're just surrounded by everyone being shredded all the time, because obviously having less body fat helps you perform better in the calisthenics movements, and you don't want to obviously have too much fat, because that's ultimately dead weight that doesn't bring you anything.
Yeah.
But once you are in a surplus and once you want to build muscle, some fat will come together with that. It's inevitable. If you follow the rate of gain that we said a few minutes ago, you should be fine in terms of that, but you're still going to gain some fat. And I think like the breaking point for most people is just like going over this point and accepting that and not being afraid of losing the abs. For example, a lot of people are just afraid of losing the abs and being shredded, not being shredded anymore. So just like accepting it, pushing through it, and having this like six months of consistent work. I think it's really important to have that out there, because that long-term effect, it's a long-term effect rather than a short-term one.
Yeah, absolutely. This is absolutely crucial. Thank you for bringing that in. That's important. Another thing that where we have to go into detail a little bit with that is when it comes to building muscle, people think of the classic bro split, where you have like, I do arms on one. No, I'm sorry for making that mistake. I do chest.
Oh, on Monday. How dare you?
How dare I? I do chest on Monday. maybe I don't know. Let's say back on Tuesday, legs on Friday, on Wednesday. Then I do shoulders on Thursday. What do I do on Friday?
Do you do your arms?
Did I say arms? I do arms on Friday, all that stuff. So everybody thinks of, okay, I got to do a split. This is actually pretty old thinking. And yes, it does work, but there's a but to this. You want to have something like a frequency of 2 in the week, which means, this is very crucial to understand, you train a muscle 2 times a week. That's important. Yes, if your big goal is to build something very, very big, you can also do it 3 times a week. I wouldn't do it 4 times a week or something, but there's a possibility of doing maybe, let's say, back 2 times a week and arms 1 time a week, so that you get a big, big biceps, because the biceps is also involved in pretty much every pulling and rowing movement that you are doing, of course. But I think the main message should be here. We need the frequency of 2 in the week to build a proper proper muscle building stimulus here. So that works best from the view of studies. Yes, there are exceptions, and it might work for some people in a different way. Yes, I've seen people who growed with less than that. I've seen people who grow with more than that, and they grow better. And it depends a little bit, but the answer is always, it depends. These are just classic infos that we have to put in here as something. This is the general thing. And from here, we put in the individual thing after watching, okay, what happened during the last months? How much did he grow with that frequency? How much did he grow with that volume, with that intensity, and all that stuff? So this is super interesting, because this is the general input that we're going to give you. The individual for you, we would have to find out in a coaching. This is what we do with our athletes usually in our coaching. When we work with them, we find out what works best for them. You know, we start at the general and we find out what works best for them. And then we go on from there. This is a very important one to say here, because I can't even say how many sets should you do. because that's in a range that also is very individual. I mean, Rado, do you know your sets that work best for you right now? Do you have that in mind?
Oh, I'm not sure, but it's always more for the upper body and less for the lower body.
Yeah.
So you can see, like, there is within that individual, you have different rep and set ranges.
Yeah.
For different muscle groups.
Yeah.
So it's just, as you said, really hard to tell. But I think, like, for the legs, I'm not mistaken, it's like something along 12 to 15
yeah.
in a week. And then for the upper body, it's 20 plus.
Yeah.
No, but so it's different there.
It's super interesting because for you, I think we have, if I have that right in my mind, it's 8 sets of squats during a week right now, plus some accessory work, which, so we, I think we come to a lower body pushing movements up to 15, something like that. If I have that right in my mind.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
And then of course we have the lower body pulling movements too, which is also for the legs, which is not to misunderstand for the listeners.
Yeah.
I think we have something similar there too.
Yeah, so something along those lines. Yeah.
Yeah. So it, all in all, every muscle group is in the legs of you is pretty much hit 15 sets during a week.
Yeah.
Yes, you can say so. As far as I know, you are someone who can tolerate a lot of pulling movements, not too much of the pushing. That's super interesting, which is very common. Actually, I'm pretty much the same. I see a lot of athletes who are pretty much the same. So pulling is something a lot of people can tolerate a lot, but this is actually something vertical pulling. A lot of people can tolerate more than like vertical pushing. Yes. But where you get the most volume in most of the times with the athletes is pretty much very often in the horizontal rowing movements. This is where people really tolerate a lot of volume most of the time. This is super interesting because the lads, they can just absorb it. Super. Yeah. What I personally see a lot at that point, this is a maybe more detailed thing, but what we have to take care of is not killing the shoulder girdle of the people with too much volume on pulling and pushing, because it will affect each other so much that you just can't. Maybe when you did too much pulling on the one day, then you have the next day you do some pushing and stuff like that. You do have very commonly some issues on that because you're too tired in the shoulder girdle for that, because it's the same muscles that stabilize the scapula at that point. And so we have to see that from a performance view too, very often, that we have to consider that stuff. But in the end, the frequency of 2 times a week is working a lot for a lot of people. And this is super interesting. What are your experiences with the rep ranges?
Well, yeah, it's in the past, it's been the classic like 8 to 12 rep range for hypertrophy, and like 3 sets of 8, 3 sets of 12, you know, whatever. It's the best thing that you can do for muscle building. And then like over time, as you kind of get to know yourself, but delve deeper into the topic, you realize that this rep range spectrum that you have for muscle building, it's a lot more than what you anticipated, you know. So it went from being 8 to 12 to 1 to all the way to 40, you know, which is really interesting. But I would say for me, like personally, I found that my body responds best in a rep range from around 5 to 15. Because if I go any lower than 5, then it's probably a bit too much intensity, which interferes directly with what I want to achieve with the muscle building goal. And then if I go to a higher rep range, something like 30, it's not really efficient for me from a time aspect, because I have to do 25 reps in order to reach a point of the last 5 being hard and thus have the same effect as with a heavy set of 12, for example.
Yeah.
You know, so I would say for myself, it's like 5 to 15. And I think that this is also like a general good general guideline for most people, because you have a nice and fine balance in between intensity and fatigue that you create with a movement.
Absolutely. This is, I would go all the way with that, let's say. So when it comes to the rep ranges, you just talked about this intensity thing. And I think this is also a very important thing that we need to talk when it comes to hypertrophy. There are actually two main drivers that gives the right stimulus to the body, which are when it comes to that stimulus that the muscle cell has to get to actually do something about it, that they got a stimulus. So this is actually pretty much the mechanical stress, which come most of the time with higher intensities, as you already said. So that's most of the time maybe something with a very big load, or especially when it comes to weighted stuff, of course, with a big load, but also with when you do maybe when a pike push-up to you is very hard, then of course you have the same thing here too. Yeah, because you are maybe at the very beginning of your fitness journey. When it is a handstand push-up, that might be it. You know? So this can also be the high intensity that you need to have this mechanical stress. Now, of course, it can also be the pistol squat when you're doing only one or maybe like five of them, and it's really, really hard for you. And it could also be the back squat where you have the weight on the shoulders, which gives you the mechanical stress. So you probably got the intention that I have here now. Yes, a front lever and stuff like that can also be the mechanical stress at that point, because it's so hard for you. If you can hold it for like 20 seconds or something like that, it's probably not so much mechanical stress anymore to build muscle. But in the beginning, especially when it comes to, let's say, holding times up to from 5 to 10 seconds or something like that, that's probably the time that you would spend in a very hard and intensive set of pull-ups. Yeah, well, when you hold a front lever for 5 to 10 seconds, it's probably the same time under tension. So the muscle is under tension during that time, and it's under a big load for you, so you can't hold it longer than that. So that I would say that goes into the same direction when it comes to building muscle. The only thing with that is when it comes to statics, it's probably not the best way when it really comes to building muscle to do it with statics, as statics do give a stimulus, but it's not exactly the thing where the muscle contracts over the full range of motion, where we come back to later on how much full range of motion, all that stuff do you need. It gives a stimulus, but it's not the ideal stimulus, I would say, at that point.
Yep. Absolutely.
So, did I forget something?
With the mechanical tension, I think it might be also important to know that there are simply some exercises which are more geared towards that, and then other ones that are better suited for this metabolic stress. Mm-hmm. Something like a back squat, like a heavy back squat, is probably more suited for this mechanical tension that you have, because if you go up to sets of 15 on the back squat, it's just too much fatigue for the body and just too big of a stimulus for the system. And then you just get more of the negative sides rather than the benefits from the movement. So something like a heavy back squat, you would rather stay in this lower rep range. And this would go also for like weighted stuff, weighted basics, like heavy pull-ups, heavy dips, and something like a bicep curl on rings. It's more suited for less intensity and more repetitions, so more this metabolic stress that you want to create with it, rather than like going for a one rep max and a ring bicep curl. You know, you obviously don't have a lot from that.
Absolutely. And this leads us to the metabolic stress, which is the other factor that can help you building muscles, which is the difference is here, you don't have so much tension on the muscle, but you do that through metabolic stuff that happens in your muscle cell and the fibers and all that, where you just look for the blood rush. And this is super interesting because yes, you do have a big blood rush when you do running, but the stress here is so low on the intensity that you probably will not build a massive quad from that, you know, from running. But if you see this from the other side, if you look at sprinters, they do have more of a big leg, which comes from the intensity that is involved in that too. And this is, let's say this is a 100-meter sprinter. They have, when you look at these guys, which are at Olympia, I mean, Usain Bolt is a very bad example because that guy is just lean and very skinny. But if you look at a lot of other sprinters, which are more the general population of sprinters, they usually have pretty thick legs. And this comes from, they have a pretty much intensity plus a lot of reps on that leg. I mean, how many steps do you take during a 100-meter run? Let's say maybe 50 per leg. Can I say so? I have no idea, but it's probably more than 10.
So it's more than 10. It's less than 100.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very much in that.
You see, at that point, the intensity always plays a role, but you gotta keep in mind the metabolic stress, the pump that you have is extremely important, because when you look at the training style that the old school bodybuilders had, people like Arnold Schwarzenegger, they had mostly the chase for the pump, and most bodybuilders do chase for the pump. They don't go into too heavy intensities most of the time. Of course, there are people who are doing it different, because there are always exceptions for the general, you know. But the very important part here is to understand that we usually have like two main drivers for it. It's the mechanical stress and it's the metabolic stress. And if we combine both, we have the perfect stimulus. And to find the perfect stimulus for the individual person in the end, you gotta watch how they react on that. And this is super duper interesting. I love that. I love to see how people react on that. You see that in the end by the growth. That's it, you know. How do people respond? And this is why this has to be observed over a longer period of time. This is why I said in the beginning, like 6 to 12 months, because that's the time frame where people actually grow. And when you observe it over that time, then you see, okay, that works for that person and that doesn't work for the person. So how many metabolic stress do we have to increase there, or even lower? Or is there something that where we have to increase mechanical stress or and all that stuff, you know? This is why we had so many episodes where we said, yes, we got to think a little bit more long term when it comes to training. So I talked so much about that topic now. Lado, there's probably something where you can say something about it too.
No, I think you rounded it up quite nicely. And if I said anything else, I think it would just be unnecessary. So I wouldn't add on anything. I think that's a nice roundup.
Yes, that's well. All right. So to come to this lovely thing that we already mentioned, how do you think about full ROM?
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about that because you always have these two extremes, as with anything. You know, there's team full range of motion, people who just, you know, big proponents of using full range of motion with every exercise possible. And then on the other side, you have people who are just like partial repetitions, almost like ego driven repetitions are the best thing you can do for the muscle. And yeah, the truth is probably somewhere in between. And I am a fan of mixing both. And it also, like for me, comes up to the exercise that I'm doing, but also to the individual situation of a person. Like if someone isn't able to stabilize themselves in a certain range, like let's say, for example, a dip, probably the best thing that you could do is do full range of motion, because in that way, you know, you train the muscle through the full range of motion, through its specific function, and thus gain the most benefits. But if someone isn't able to stabilize the shoulder joint in the bottom of the dip and just loses positioning completely because of lack of that stability, and that poses a risk of potentially getting injured, then I would probably tell that person, hey, cut off the range of motion, go to a depth where you feel safe and secure. And in that range, you try to progress and in that way build muscle. So it comes up to the individual situation, but we also like shouldn't underestimate what each of these do to the muscle. Like full range of motion, just as I noted, it will train the muscle through its function fully. And there have been like also newly studies which propose that the stretch sensation of an exercise is probably a really, really important thing that plays a big role when it comes to building muscle. So the stretch is important. And then on the other side, with partial repetitions, what you can do wonderfully is just have this overload of the tissue, of the structure, and probably go more into the direction of mechanical tension. And in that way, gain the benefits out of it. Like something like heavy rows tends to work a lot better than having full focus, slow pace, concentrated rows. That's something that I found for myself. Like my back responds a lot better to heavy rowing with a lot of momentum, partial repetitions, rather than going to the other direction, having like full range of motion, feeling the stretch, feeling the contraction. So it also comes up to the exercise for me, for example.
Absolutely. Would you say that if you are maybe shortcutting a range because of stability or for the reason that you know it gives you the better stimulus, would you say there is a very good way to compensate that as well afterwards?
In what sense?
The thing where I want to go is maybe you're not going that low on the dips.
Yeah.
And you had the mechanical stress now on it on the chest and on the triceps. You know, we got the right stimulus here. Would you add on other exercises to that to make sure we trained the muscle fully?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, if you're restricted in a motion and you can't perform it fully because of the reasons we mentioned, I would like after that add on certain exercises. Like for example, if a full range of motion push-up is possible, then I would add that in for the chest. And then after that, maybe something like a tricep extension so that we still train those two muscles through the full range of motion, feel the stress sensation, and also go more in the direction of metabolic stress then.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think this is a very important one for those who may think, okay, but do I miss out something? There are ways to just keep all this stuff together. I mean, like you said, having the dips first and afterwards maybe some triceps extensions and something for the chest, which can be a push-up or maybe some flies on the rings, stuff like that. Yeah, whatever you want to do there. If you know what you want to hit, make sure to hit it from every angle. Yes, and over the full ROM. Yes, I would say so. But it doesn't have to be that certain exercise. You have the chance to build up that stuff with several exercises. Why not? This is even a very, very good way actually to do so. So in the end, we can profit from that a lot. All right. The issue that comes with that I see a lot with that is to really know what you have to do here, in especially when it comes to the exercise selections, you need to have a very good knowledge of anatomics and of course the biomechanics, and of course understanding biomechanics with your own body, which is a super duper interesting topic to me. I love to talk about that, because this is where all that stuff comes to the point where it gets really, 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 really individual and very interesting for the one person. So I could say yes, the dips are the first exercise, and then we do something for the chest, maybe some flies and some triceps extensions. But now there comes in the super interesting stuff where we have to see, okay, what works best for the individual, because otherwise they miss out on that because they didn't know what is best for them. So there are several ways to actually do a triceps extension. It could be the overhead triceps extension. It could be the diamond push-up. It could be maybe a bench dip. It could be like whatever else you want to do for the triceps, you know. It could also be some stuff that you do maybe with dumbbells, to go a little bit away from calisthenics and do some isolation stuff with other machines and external weights and all that stuff. For isolation, it makes absolutely sense to do so. But the super interesting part here is, what do you want to hit? Because the triceps, you can hit very different, from very different angles, different heads of the triceps you can hit. And it needs, you need to know what hits the right one that really serves you. Because what is actually the weakness that I have in terms of aesthetics, and of course, in terms of maybe also performance. And then the same comes in for also the chest. Because also in the chest, you have the upper part, you have the lower part. How do I hit what? What are the best exercises to actually hit this the best way? And there are so many possibilities to actually hit the muscle from the right angle to make it grow the best way. So this is where you can go super detailed, and you have to know all the biomechanics and all the anatomics for yourself at that point. And this is why I feel so yeah, it's super super interesting to me to see how one reacts on what exercise, how does he feel, because I see some stuff that works so amazing with Rado. When I look at how he grows at certain body parts and what works so good and what doesn't work that good. And so that is super interesting to me with every athlete that we actually have. Yeah. Did I forget something? No, I don't know.
like I agree completely with everything you said. This knowledge of biomechanics and anatomy is really important when it comes to hitting specific things and knowing the details. I think like why this question is always asked, like, can you build muscle with calisthenics, is people realized, yes, it is possible, but it's harder. It's more difficult compared to weight training and machine training. Because when you look at it, weight training and machine training is pretty straightforward. It's like almost like straight motions from A to B, you know, especially something like a machine. It's directly targeted with this motion to target the specific muscle groups. But with calisthenics motions, it's like so much open space and free space to compensate and to do a motion differently. And if you do a little detail in a different fashion than before, it can completely change up the motion, you know, and completely change the target muscles. Like something like elbow placement in a pull-up can play a big role whether or not you hit the lats properly, you know, or scapula placement, you know. So there's so much free space, and you can compensate in a lot of ways. And that's why it's really hard to kind of stay strict with calisthenics. And unless you have the general knowledge and really delve deeper into details in these topics, it can be really hard and struggle. You can struggle with it. to achieve higher levels of muscle mass because of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This is actually the problem that we solve a lot with the people that work with us, because they have restricted equipment or decided, I want to do the calisthenics stuff, but I also want to build some muscle, and they come to us because then we have to see, okay, what works good for you, what are your biomechanics, what angles work best for you, for what muscle in the end, what is actually the thing that is the really working thing for you individual, because it all starts always in the general state, but from there on you got to individualize all the time to really get out the best for the individual person. And this is actually the stuff what I really love to do, and where it really gets interesting, but this is also the stuff where you really have to dive into and really have to question yourself all the time. Is this actually the right thing for that person? What could work better? What did work? How was the rate? How good did that person respond? I mean, when I look at you, Rado, you just blowed up muscular wise. I mean, when I look at the last 2 years, you went from a skinny guy to, I would like to say, a monster, but you don't even fit your pants, and you have to buy all the clothes new, and you are in pretty much the same weight that you had before.
Yeah, which is crazy. Like, it's so funny.
It's super interesting to see at that point.
Yeah. I think like it's this thing that people talk about being muscle maturity, you know, just growing into it. And obviously this rate of gain that we talked about is different when you're at the beginning versus later on. Yeah. Even though it's like the thing you mentioned, 400 grams a year can make a significant difference in how you actually look.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And this is super interesting because, I see this so often with people. They stay the same weight, but they look completely different. And the difference in weight is maybe half of a kg, like 500 grams or something. Yeah. What did change? The right approach to training changed. They nailed the details a little bit better. And this is something I love to go into details when the basics are done. And this is super duper interesting because I'm the one who's always like, nail the basics, nail the basics, nail the basics. This is all that you need, because in most cases, that's the point. Because nailing the basics is for most people the hardest part here. What we discussed in the beginning is the basics, having the volume, intensity, and calories. Yeah, knowing the frequency and having certain rep ranges to nail the mechanical stress and the metabolic stress. And from there on, we go into everything that is a little bit more detailed. What is the exercise selection that you need? And this is the stuff that we do for the people, because the details is the stuff where it gets really, really ugly for the people, because this is not your job and you're not completely into this, and you don't spend years to actually study this stuff, you know. That's what we did in the end. This is why this is the profession that we have. So I love to have that work, because it's always, I love to be in the lab for the person, you know. But I also love to have these small little changes for people and having this big, big, big impact on their performance, but also on their actually physique when it comes to that. I mean, most of the time you switch up the small stuff to have the big impact. When you have the basics, then we go into details. And we help usually the people to nail the basics first, then we go in there, because it's easy. It's common sense for you to have the basics on point. Then we go into the details and say, hey, okay, now you focus on that. Now we do that stuff. Now we do this. And over years, then you develop a physique that is so massive, and you develop a strength that is so good that you actually look back and look at it and say, wow, I'm 3 years into this. It's amazing where I'm now. I never expected that when I started, you know, because most of people really underestimate what they can do in about the next 3 years when it comes to physical development.
Absolutely.
So I think we covered up a lot of this hypertrophy stuff. If you're interested in that topic, please let us know. I love to talk about that topic. And if you have like certain questions about it, shoot us the messages. Yeah. Shoot us the questions. Let us know in the comments what you would like to us to discuss when it comes to the hypertrophy, because we would like to talk about that topic in the next certain episodes that are coming now. So we are going into a hypertrophy phase now with the Strength and Skills podcast, and we would love to have some input from you. What are your questions about that? Where do you struggle? What do you need from us so that we can help you with that? If you need some more help with that, yeah, then really feel free to contact us on bar-bell.coaching.de/links, and you just apply for a coaching call with us, and then we can talk about it. How can we actually help you really into detail with that stuff? So if the podcast is not really helping you, then feel free to contact us personally. It's easy. Just go there, check the free call, and we're gonna see each other on a Zoom call and talk about it. That's an easy one. Yeah. So we love to build the base here in the podcast to give you as many informations as possible, so that you can really develop and get your knowledge here. But if you understand for yourself, okay, I don't have the time to study too deep into the topic, then feel free to contact us and we do the job for you, do the detail work, and gonna help you. For that, just go to bar-bellcoaching.de/links. There you go, or contact us on Instagram. The Strength and Skills podcast is usually also a way where you can contact us easily. Thank you, guys. Radu, do you have any last words for this episode?
Yeah, go to the gym, pump yourself up, and enjoy the gains.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys, and have a great workout.